The year 2005 was a record year for hurricane destruction in the United States. This was the year of Katrina, Rita, and Wilma. Each of these storms ultimately caused over $10 billion in damage to the U.S., and just from Katrina alone, the estimate there was $81 billion. The last 2 years, fortunately, have been less active. However, there are a lot of people that are worried that in the future that we will see more intense storms, and that climate change is playing a role here. This morning, in this hour of the show, we'll be talking with Chris Mooney about his book, Storm World. The subtitle is Hurricanes, Politics, and the Battle Over Global Warming. Harcourt is the publisher of the book. And in this book, he takes a look at the debate that's going on within the scientific community on this very question about whether or not global climate change has some effect on the intensity of hurricanes. And also we'll talk about that, and also perhaps about about how global warming will play in this year's presidential election. All of that and your questions, welcome in this part of the show. All you have to do, if you'd like to join us, is pick up the telephone and call. We just ask people, though, to keep their comments brief so that we can move along and get in as many people as possible. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Our guest, Chris Mooney, is the Washington correspondent for Seed magazine and is author of the previous book, The Republican War on Science. He makes his home in Washington, D.C., and he's joining us by telephone. Chris Mooney, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for talking with us.
The
one of the things that I think it might be interesting just to note here up front, as you do in the book, is that this whole question and Hurricane Katrina particularly did touch you personally. You had family and friends who live in New Orleans and were definitely affected by Katrina.
Yeah, that's correct. My mother lost her home in Katrina.
So was that what started really to get you interested in maybe exploring this particular question? That is, what was going on with hurricanes, and was there some expectation that there'd be more, not that there would be more hurricanes, but that the ones we got would be more intense, and then as a result there would be more damage?
Exactly. That, in combination with the fact that I already was pretty much of a wonk on global warming in general. And so the two just kind of came together at that moment for me and for a lot of other people, too.
Yeah. And also, just to be clear, and I think that it's also something that you address here very early on in the book, that that you're not saying, the scientists are not saying, that global warming caused Hurricane Katrina, that doesn't, or anything else like that, any other weather disasters. The issue is not did it cause the hurricane to happen, but is there some relationship between climate, global warming, and the strength and intensity of these storms?
Yeah, exactly. Causation is sort of a meaningless thing when you're talking about global warming and an individual event. And they're always going to be hurricanes. Hurricanes are part of the climate, and the question is whether the climatology of them will change. And that's something that you can only determine by looking at averages over time, not at any individual event.
Mm-hmm. How do I'm sure we can go on and talk about a lot of things, but after there was a real serious concern after 2005 that something was going on here and that we would expect to have a lot of intense storms. And in fact, some of the people that you deal with in the book who make predictions did indeed make predictions that we would have some serious storms in 2006 and 2007. And as it turns out, fortunately, that wasn't the case. How does the fact that we had this really bad year and that we expected to have bad years, but then the last two were really not, how does that enter into the mix here as we explore the subject?
Well, actually, I think there's a lot of confusion on this point. In 2006, we had a quiet Atlantic year. In 2007, and that was because of the effect of El Nino, which is well understood. 2007, we had a pretty average Atlantic year and two Category 5 storms. They just didn't hit the United States. So, you know, and globally, if you look at 2006 and 2007, there were some spooky storms, Katrina-like spooky, just not in our part of the world. It would, again, make you start thinking about hurricanes and global warming. So I wouldn't say that the fact that we've gotten it easy in the United States in 2006 and 2007 really says anything about the scientific picture.
Hmm. How the major, I guess, maybe about half of the book really has to do with how it is that over time scientists have come to understand hurricanes and how they work. How well really do we understand hurricanes and how they're formed and the factors that go into making the difference between a smaller storm that obviously that can still be destructive, but a smaller storm and something that is of the level of strength of Katrina?
Well, especially since World War II, we really started to study hurricanes a lot because the U.S. military had to operate in parts of the world, especially the Pacific, where they had to experience them, typhoons being the same as hurricanes, but in the West Pacific. So that's when science really started, and there's been a great deal of progress. There's a lot of understanding now of the basic physics of hurricanes. You know, they draw their power from the sea surface. The inflowing air, you know, draws up energy from the sea surface, and that essentially powers the storm. And it becomes a thermodynamic system. And the equations have been written that govern this. But, of course, there's a lot that we don't know as well about the sort of small-scale dynamics of what's happening in a very intense hurricane, because it's hard to be there over the ocean. We do fly aircraft into them in the United States. And so we get a lot of data. But there's still many mysteries. Mm-hmm. Science has definitely advanced quite considerably, though.
And that's, I suppose, it is worth acknowledging that a lot of what we've learned about hurricanes and how they operate does come from this kind of direct observation. That, in fact, some of the people that you talk about in the book would probably argue that that's really the only way that you can learn about hurricanes is actually to encounter them up close and personal.
Yeah, or at least they would privilege that experience. I mean, I think you won't find anyone today who would say that, you know, the equation, the thermodynamics are, you know, pointless to have, and you don't need to be in the aircraft at this point to get some of that. But nevertheless, the aircraft is contributing very important data. And we keep actually improving the kinds of measurement technologies that are on the plane. So just this year, I can't remember the name of the instrument that they added, but it changed our estimate of the strength of the two Category 5 Atlantic storms, Dean and Felix, and it was shifted upward based upon new instrumentation on the planes just this year.
Well, we already have someone to talk with here. Let's do that on our line number 4, the toll-free line. The caller's nearby in Belgium. That's line number 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. I'd like to point out, and you have just touched it a little bit, that hurricanes are only a small part of the situation. We feel hurricanes a lot because they're in our news and very local to us. But typhoons and monsoons in Southeast Asia are every bit as strong, if not stronger, especially coming into the Indian subcontinent. When they go into Bangladesh and stuff, they cause a great deal more harm there, too. And most people just stay with the hurricane aspect. They don't really talk too much about what the other half of the world is dealing with.
Well, Chris, I think that you can't disagree with a point like that. Obviously, that we're really here. Our focus is on the weather that affects us in the United States, and this book really is indeed about Atlantic hurricanes. But it is also true that there is this concern about the severity of weather around the world, not just that affects North America, but around the world. And again, there's this question of, well, have changes in global climate contributed to more severe storms everywhere?
Right. And, you know, I would just agree with the caller on one point of specificity. Let me say something else first. I called my book Storm World because I didn't want to ignore the fact that the rest of the world experiences hurricanes. Not every country, but many countries of the world do. The technical term is tropical cyclone. We call it hurricane when it's in the Atlantic or the East Pacific, typhoon in the West Pacific, and the rest of the world just calls them cyclones. Monsoons are not the same thing, but Bangladesh is affected by cyclones and had a very devastating one this year, Cyclone Sitter, which killed somewhere between 3,000 and 10,000 people, we now think, although the death count is not, I don't know if it's official at this point. So these storms exact a devastating toll in many parts of the world, including the developing world, and kill many more people there than they do in the United States. So if there's a change, if they worsen significantly, the pain is going to be felt in many places.
Thank you very much.
All right, and let us continue. We'll talk next with someone in Terre Haute, Indiana, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I think it's not just cyclones. We have severe weather changes in general. I have been noticing just everything is just more severe in general. We don't just get a tornado. We get huge tornadoes. We get three or four tornadoes. You know, it isn't just, you know, it's not, you know, we get clusters of them now. We don't, what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, that it's not, yes, that obviously that other kinds of weather, severe thunderstorms, heavy rain, tornadoes, all those
flooding.
Sorts of things. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let me address this.
Yeah.
So, theoretically, I would expect global warming. You're adding a massive amount of heat to the Earth's system. That's going to be felt in all kinds of weather in various ways. I would expect all kinds of weather to be changing. The question is how. It turns out that hurricanes are very dramatic, and there's also, you would think it'd be somewhat straightforward because the energy comes from the sea surface for the storm, and you're heating up the sea surface. You would expect a more powerful storm. That's sort of simpler in some ways, you would think, although it turns out not to be. It sounds simpler than some other aspects of weather and how they might change. People are actually now talking about what global warming might do to tornadoes, which are very different from hurricanes. They're over land, not over sea, among other things. And they're much smaller because of the recent events that we've seen, the terrible tornado destruction of just a couple of days ago. It turns out I've looked into that, and the science is murkier there.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Well, what you do in the book is try to look at, say, two kind of groups of scientists and concentrate on two in particular that have different ways of approaching this particular question, that is the hurricane question. And in recent years, I think that one person in particular, this fellow at MIT, Kerry Emanuel, has come forward and has been a leader in on the side that's making the argument that says, yes, in fact, we do see an effect of the global climate change on the intensity of hurricanes and has some way of explaining how that works. Tell us about Kerry Emanuel.
Well, he's one of the most distinguished meteorologists of this generation. He's very well known and very well respected, and is thought of by his peers as a very cautious scientist. So when he came out being sort of shocked and alarmed by his findings in 2005, everyone really took note when he said that hurricanes have dramatically intensified, and it looks like the cause is global warming, heating the oceans. And about not quite 2 years have passed since then. Actually, more than 2 years, shortly, just more than 2 years. And as far as I can tell, he's definitely holding to that position. Although there's been a lot more debate since then, and some scientists have shifted views around accordingly as new information and new analyses have come out. But the basics for Emanuel and for a number of other scientists, they're still arguing that the storms are changing, that the changes are detectable now. And they're still pretty concerned about it. Another scientist, Greg Holland, who I talk about in my book, is also a theoretician like Emanuel, and he's now making the argument, I saw him make it at the American Meteorological Society meeting in New Orleans, that we're seeing it in the number of Category 5s in the Atlantic. We've had 8 Category 5s in the last 5 years. And there's no period in the record, although the record gets progressively worse to go back in time, there's no period in the record that has anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other scientists are now criticizing that argument by Holland because that's the way this field works. It's very contentious. But that's an alarming argument to hear from scientists.
I think that the history of modern meteorology and the kind of good records that we have, it's only about maybe about a century, about 100 years.
It depends on what you're talking about our records of. For hurricanes, you know, you go back and you start having written accounts, ship's logs, things like that, back into the 1800s, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And for really devastating things that were recorded and written about a lot, you have records further back than that. But in terms of the modern record, you know, we don't get the satellites till the 60s and 70s. And then you start really seeing all storms.
Yeah.
Or having the capacity. Before that, you know, you weren't necessarily even going to know always when there was one.
So the question is, how much, because we know that that there are cycles in the weather and they can take a long time to work themselves out, how much data do you have to know before you can say something like, if you do see a big uptick in Category 5 storms, for example, how much data do you have before you can say something about whether or not that's just, it's a natural uptick and it's going to happen and it's happened before, or you're going to say something like, well, you know, we actually think that this is something different and that this really hasn't happened before?
Well, there's scientists are split on that right now. It's clear that that's a big deviation from the record. Mm-hmm. You know, 8 of them in 5 years, that's more than there usually are. But it doesn't really matter if you think the record is so poor that there probably was a period like that that just wasn't noticed. So there were a lot of Category 5s in the 60s, for example. Mm-hmm. Not as many, but the argument is, well, yeah, maybe there were as many, but we just didn't know exactly how strong they were.
And I guess we should mention it at the same time that we have scientists who are, on the one hand, who are making this argument that there has been an effect of global warming on hurricanes, that they are more intense because of that, that you do still have scientists who have been making projections about hurricanes for a long time, and probably the guy who is best known is William Gray, who is interestingly enough is at Colorado State, so they're in the middle of the country. But this is the man who, among others, every year issues a prediction of the storm season to come, and I'm not sure that they're. Is there actually already one for 2008 already? They've made a.
Yeah, they do it late December, and that's the really long range one. Yeah. Where it's the least likely to be completely accurate. And I'm trying to remember what he forecast. I think he forecast pretty much average year. I'm just trying to remember, and don't assume that I'm precise on this, but I think it was something like 15 total storms in the Atlantic.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, let's talk with some of the folks here. We have others who are listening and want to join the conversation. We'll go next to talk with someone in Savoy, and this would be line number one. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always been interested in, some of the claims about global warming and everything. And one of the things that I find these people don't really understand is they don't know the difference between enthalpy and temperature. And it turns out, no one can say that their models obey the first and second law of thermodynamics, i.e. the interconversion of heat and work. Then this not understanding the concept of enthalpy is a serious misgiving to me. You can have a mass at the same temperature but different enthalpies.
Are you saying climate models don't contain the laws of thermodynamics in them? Because if so, that's incorrect.
No, according to... I've never had anybody answer the question wherever I've asked them... Do they obey the first and second law of thermodynamics? And the answer is, we're not sure.
Models is that they, the fundamental equations that govern the atmosphere thermodynamics.
Okay, can you tell me what the difference between temperature? Can you have? Do you understand what I'm saying?
But you're wrong about climate models. That's the basis.
Well, okay. I'm afraid that I've asked Don Weebles here on campus, and he hasn't been able to say. He hasn't been able to say yes or no to me.
Well, I'm quite confident. Not a scientist myself, but done plenty of reporting on it, and that's basics of what a model
I think
is.
There is a problem. Here's the other thing, too, I've got a problem with, too. Do you know the relative mass of the ocean relative to the atmosphere? Do you know how much the ocean weighs in comparison to the atmosphere?
No, I don't.
Mass of the atmosphere is about 10 to the 19th kilograms. The mass of the ocean is about 100 or possibly 200 times greater. And the heat capacity of the ocean is a factor of 4 times greater than the mass of the... there's a factor of 4 there.
Okay.
All right. Whenever you do the arithmetic on that, you'll find that it takes a tremendous amount of energy to heat the ocean up 1 degree over the atmosphere. And whenever you say the ocean is heating up 2 and 3 degrees, you do the arithmetic on that, there's not enough energy on this planet to do it. And so this is another problem I have with these theories.
Well, you know, you seem like you have a little knowledge, but
I've
we're talking
a lot.
About the surface of the ocean that we're warming, not the entire ocean.
And, well,
it's been shown that the surface of the ocean in the tropical regions is warming.
Okay, well, no one has done an energy balance to prove that it's accumulating from the planet's, you know, from that closed system inside the planet.
Well, actually, James Hansen of NASA has done precisely that study.
Well, okay.
Little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Well, all I'm saying is I don't think there's nearly enough information to say that it's related to man. And especially
no, there's just a scientific consensus. You know, this drives me so crazy. People come in, they say they know a little science, and they think that that's enough to sort of unseat all of established scientific opinion, and they do it on the radio.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I'm very well educated. I do a lot of mathematical modeling.
I know.
And I understand thermodynamics, and you don't. And there's a lot of claims out there that can't meet the fundamental tests. And, like, you didn't even know what the relative mass of the ocean to the atmosphere is. It's a tremendous difference. And that ocean is a heat sink of unbelievable proportions. Another thing about the ocean is...
I find this so funny. I wish our moderator would get in here. But, you know, there's a huge...
Well, you guys have lost me in the dust a long, long time ago.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You don't want to talk
about these... Get a caller
who
calls in and, you know, starts to think that by talking on the radio, it's possible to unseat the scientific consensus of the entire world, national academies around the world, just by saying some complicated-sounding things. I find it hilarious, in a way.
Well, what I guess to me, the one thing that I come away with is indeed the idea that to have an effect on global climate. I mean, you're talking about something that truly is enormous. That to me is sort of mind boggling. That even just the idea that you could change the temperature of the ocean enough so that it would make that significant a difference in terms of the intensity of storms. And that's something I, just as a layperson, I have a difficult time with.
Well, it's been shown, you know, 1 degree is actually quite a lot in the context of the planetary system.
And I suppose we, you know, for the benefit of this caller or anybody else, I guess we, as far as this particular question, that is global climate change and what it does to weather, and very specifically what it does with hurricanes. This is by no means a settled question. It is still something that people in the climatology community are debating. I mean, there are people who feel very strongly, and among others, the men you talked about. But it's still, you know, it's still an open question.
No, well, on global warming and hurricanes, precisely what's happening is an open question. On are we causing global warming through human activity, not really an open question anymore. And I get really sick and tired of these callers, and I've been on so many radio shows, where they come in and they think that they can spout a little bit of scientific-sounding stuff, and therefore we're going to all suddenly stop listening to all of the leading scientists of the world who have come to a very strong consensus about this. It just drives me crazy. It's sort of it's the norm of radio programs, and I guess I've kind of had enough of it.
Well, we'll have to move on in any case because I have another caller here at our midpoint already, and I would like to introduce again our guest for the benefit of anyone who has just tuned in, Chris Mooney. He's the Washington correspondent for Seed Magazine, author of the book The Republican War on Science. He makes his home in Washington, D.C., and is the author of the book Storm World, the subtitle Hurricanes, Politics, and the Battle Over Global Warming. It's published by Harcourt and in part is looking at what is now a pretty serious debate within meteorology, and that is whether or not global warming is increasing the intensity of hurricanes. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Effingham, and this is our toll free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Two questions. The first is, I think I heard your guest say that the ocean has warmed, or that everything is warmed by a degree. I'm no scientist, but if it is that correct, that a degree, and I follow this as closely as I can, but 2 or 3 more degrees are going to be presenting us with some disasters, more so than now. Is that?
Yeah, it's a degree. It's more than a degree Fahrenheit for the global average temperature over the past, I forget, maybe 50 years, maybe the past century. It's not a degree Celsius yet.
And the Celsius means the air?
Means what?
No, those are just a different temperature scale.
Okay. Well, that helps me a little more, but I've listened over time and heard those statements about, past the norm 1, 2, or 3 degrees and all the things that are happening. And I haven't heard the addressing of, our satellite pictures of the glaciers, older, since satellites went up there, and what they were and what they are now. Does your book address those things? That's melting, and the penguins and all these other folk could live there. The ice cap is disappearing.
Well, my book doesn't get, because my book's mainly about hurricanes, but without a doubt, one of the most alarming observations we've had in the last year is the dramatic retreat of Arctic sea ice.
Yes, well, I saw Al Gore's picture, the show about, how the ramifications of all that, and not being a scientist then, or a part-time scientist like some folk, but I want to finish by saying, keep on persevering, sir. I mean, you are doing a service to the laity of the world who have no means of understanding the world we live in. And if we listen to people who say there is no global warming, which tells everybody else that the pollution rates and all these things that are creating and adding to, then full steam ahead. Build 40 zillion more cars. And all the other things and the burning of fossil fuels and all that without scientifically finding out what we could have got to do in order to stop what's happening and reverse it. So, but I enjoy this program, and I've enjoyed your comments and observations as well. And thank you very much. Keep on.
Thank you. And I've, my comments have been a little strong today. I'm not always like this, but I just sort of have had this experience of, constantly being asked to debate an issue that the scientific community has resolved to a degree of certainty that ought to be sufficient for everybody, especially given what's at stake.
And just to, I want to make sure that I'm clear, because I think for a long time what we were saying was that what the data shows is that the average global temperature has increased by 1 degree over roughly the last 100 years. Are we now saying that the increase has been more than a degree?
I don't actually have at my fingertips the precise nature of the increase. Depends on where you start, and depends on where you end. But yeah, I know that it's not with degrees Celsius at this point. It's closer to a degree
Fahrenheit. Okay, and that we're still saying that one of the things that's concerning is that of that period, the warmest years have indeed been within the last about 15.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's an argument over whether the warmest for the globe was 1998 or 2005. Hmm. And something like, out of the past 10, a lot of them have been really high.
All right. Let's talk with someone in Urbana. This is line number one. Hello.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Your subject is really brings a lot of controversy. The caller back there. Person talking about the thermodynamics, I think he wanted to use the word entropy and not entopy. E-N-T-O-P-Y is how you're saying it. You're right about
that. Little knowledge is dangerous.
I know. But one of the things that you're correct about the ocean warming is basically surface, probably about 20 meters down, and the movement of the surface. And also, you can talk about global warming, where there was a paper published in Britain about plankton, tropical plankton moving farther north up into the colder zones due to off Greenland and stuff like that, and they actually are not as efficient at producing oxygen as the colder water plankton. And also the British Navy has been doing surveys on the Arctic coast, or the Greenland coast, measuring the lack of salinity, like melt off the Greenland ice sheet. And they, the last thing I read in the Proceedings of the Royal Academy was that the 89 cubic miles of ice was melting every year at their last estimate about a year ago. So that's not good, because you can shift the ocean currents with that. But it's hard to talk about global warming because it's developing. And also, remember, one of the things is the historical record shows natural phenomenon. Let's say 5,000 years ago, there weren't any cars around, and people weren't burning as many fossil fuels as they do now. So we just keep pouring all the CO2 in the atmosphere. So I'm thinking of it more or less as going to be, if we don't stop, I mean, can we stop? Or, I mean, will we just continue pouring this stuff into the atmosphere, and then the balance will tip, or they call the tipping point, that kind of thing, and then it'll be catastrophic, and will these storms get, like you're right to talk about these storms, will they become huge or more prolific, or will they, who knows? I mean, the outcome is very unknowable. Let me say it'll just worsen, and that's my opinion on it. Thank you.
Right. Well, we don't know all of the ramifications of continuing to pour the stuff in the atmosphere, but to me, hurricanes are not necessarily the worst, and they're also not necessarily—they're definitely not the best understood. We can say one thing with certainty: if we keep, letting the temperature go up and up and up, and never do anything to stop it, no one knows where the tipping point is, or there's arguments about where the tipping point is. But eventually, you will pass it, and what that entails is the loss of large sheets of land-based ice, Greenland and West Antarctica, and that ice, if it is put in the water as liquid, contains many, many feet of sea level rise, leading to a completely different planet and the inability to live in a lot of places where there are very large cities.
Let's, again, we'll go on to another caller, and this would be someone in Urbana, line number two. Hello?
Oh, good morning. Mm-hmm. Interesting talk. And I would say your guest did not overreact at all. If I'd been on his spot, I would have used stronger language and more quickly. And, David, I think you're slow. This supercilious self-recommended savant from Savoy is full of it. And if he's so interested in debating the matter, he ought to take himself to a scientific forum where he can debate with his peers. This whole idea that evolution, global warming, I share your guest's disdain and impatience with these self-styled experts who have basically no information but are just putting a line out there that confuses the issue, a very vital issue. Probably one of the most vital issues that humankind is going to face. So, I've said my two bits. Thanks.
Right. I appreciate your support.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Again, our guest is Chris Mooney. His book is Storm World, Hurricanes, Politics, and the Battle Over Global Warming. It was published last summer. It's published by Harcourt. And again, it takes a look at the debate within the meteorological community about whether or not global warming is increasing the intensity of hurricanes. Questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, one thing I want to make sure I give you a chance to talk about is has to do with politics and how it affects the discussion of this issue, because I think that you're saying is that that particularly NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, kind of weighed in on the side of those people who were saying no, that global warming was not increasing the intensity of hurricanes.
Yeah, what happened was that NOAA unfortunately kind of got egg on its face because it took a position which it shouldn't have done in an ongoing scientific debate. It should have said, there's a debate. There's evidence on both sides. Scientists are arguing this point. Rather than doing that, it said, one side's right. And a government agency shouldn't be doing that when the scientists are still fighting.
All right, let's talk with some other folks here. We'll go to a caller on a cell phone. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes?
I've been listening just to the last bit of this, and I echo your guest. Extreme kind of frustration with this idea that that because there's evidence to the contrary of some scientific hypothesis or theory that makes it debatable. All science is debatable. It's the nature of science isn't to prove anything. It's to disprove and falsify. And as your guest says, the vast majority of the evidence that we have on this issue shows that global warming is real, that we are adding to it, and that it's changing the the world that we live in.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, unfortunately, what's happened with some of these issues, like global warming, also many environmental risk issues, all these issues concerning the dangers of chemicals to people and so forth, is that there are strategic attempts to attack the information and sow doubt, which you can always do in science because science always has uncertainty to it, sow doubt, make it seem like we don't know anything. In fact, we know a lot of things. And then that, in turn, blocks political action. It's been a very effective strategy. It goes back to tobacco, and I and many others are sick of it.
Precisely, precisely. I think this, the ability for people to turn scientific information into sort of political bludgeons and media spin campaigns plays on the fact that our educational system, I'm a professor of psychology and linguistics at the University of Illinois, and it plays on the failure of the educational system to teach people what science does and how it works, and just complete failure in that regard to teach our children and our adolescents and our adults, for that matter, what science is all about.
I agree. People are uncomfortable with uncertainty, and so if you tell them something's uncertain, they say, oh, we don't know what we can do about it.
Yeah,
unfortunate, because
it's really,
you're never
really
going to get
a shame.
All right. Well, I thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We'll just continue here. We'll talk next with somebody in Muhammad. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm got in about halfway through, but I just wondered if you would speak to the fact that, like, the present administration seems to have just dragged their feet, something terrible, on the recovery down in New Orleans. And I can't help but wonder if, even though they say, you know, that they're going to rebuild it, is there any future in rebuilding New Orleans? And I'll just get your answer.
Well, I was just there 2 weeks ago. I mean, I grew up there. I still have family there. I'm not at all pleased with the rate of recovery in the city. I think there's many, many things being done wrong. You know, honestly, the Corps of Engineers is now doing what it's supposed to do to assess the risks, the worst-case scenarios for hurricanes hitting the city, and build back the levees slowly, slowly. I mean, if one comes in 2008, you know, and it's strong enough, then we're not going to be prepared. But maybe, you know, if New Orleans is spared for long enough, the Corps of Engineers will get them back to Category 3. And actually, I don't know if they were ever at Category 3, but get them there. And then maybe someday, maybe it'll cost a fortune to get them to Category 5. If you can protect it, then New Orleans has a future. If you don't protect it, then eventually there's going to be another disaster.
Mm. You know, it seems to me that in the years coming up to 2005, there certainly was discussion. There were people who were saying things like, you know, it's going to happen sooner or later. A big storm is going to hit. And, yes, and I know that you. Yes, in fact, I know you were one of them. There were people who were saying sooner or later a big storm is going to hit New Orleans and it's going to be devastating. Now that it's actually happened. Are there people who are somehow hoping against hope that it's not going to happen again and that they don't have to, in fact, be prepared for another Katrina?
Well, it's just that we forget and we lose urgency. I mean, I don't think anyone would rationally say it's never going to happen again. I think that the rational outlook is it's a matter of time. And, you know, then how strong will the storm be? New Orleans is going to be okay. If it's Category 1, Category 2, you start getting higher than that, and I start worrying again, and then it becomes a race against time with how well can we re-protect it before another really bad one comes. There will be another really bad one, and I think that if there's another really bad one and the city gets flooded again, anything like Katrina, then I just, at that point, I really think everyone's going to say, I don't know what they're going to say. I think that'll be a very sad day. I hope it never comes.
Yeah. I want to I have a couple of other callers. I wanted to get them, but one question I want to give you the opportunity to talk about here for a couple of minutes at least is how you think that this whole debate that we've been referring to here, this debate about global warming and what we should do about it, is going to play in the presidential election this year.
Well, it's a good question. I've written a good deal about this lately, obviously, because we're starting to really winnow the field, and you can start actually saying something intelligent about it. On the one hand, McCain and Clinton and Obama are actually similar on climate, and that is that they agree it's human caused. They want to pass a bill to cap domestic emissions do something about it. The nature of the bill that I think they would pass, the Democrats differ from McCain on that. The Democrats want something stronger. My fear is that the media is going to treat this like, oh, they'll agree on global warming, therefore it's not controversial, therefore we're not going to talk about it on the campaign trail. And I hope that's not the case, because there are really important differences that exist between them, and we need to talk about those differences.
All right, let's go to Urbana for another caller. This is line number three. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to put out a comment with regard to your guest getting angry for the first caller regarding those facts that he was spewing out. Just like the other caller said, he has every right to get angry. I would like to, since this is the political season, put something out there. If it was George Herbert Walker Bush who put out the movie An Inconvenient Truth, there would be no debate as to whether global warming was real or not. But what happened was, it was a reviled liberal who put out that movie. And because he was reviled, these people are going to nitpick. And just like Chris said, when people nitpick, they're going to plant the seeds of doubt. What conservatives and Republicans need to realize is that global warming affects them too. What they need to realize is that in the future, their children are going to inherit a planet that is less biodiverse, that is less predictable, that is just not a very good place to live in. Wars may spring up, you know, just really, let's paint a picture. There is no debate. Global warming is real, and that is what conservatives need to realize. It is affecting them right now. It will affect their children in the future. And whenever these debates come up in which people try to snipe radio guests with facts and figures, they're going to have to get angry, because this is serious. We are standing at a precipice, and people need to realize how dire the consequences really are.
Well, thanks. I just add one thing. I think global warming was a partisan issue for a long time. It's ceasing to be, and, you know, McCain shows that, Schwarzenegger shows that. Republicans are changing because the evidence is becoming so overwhelming. It's becoming a bit passé to be a denier of the science at this point, and that's a good thing. And the more bipartisan it gets, the better off we all are.
There is one thing I would also like to put out there. Conservatives and Republicans are beginning to acknowledge that global warming is real, but what they're saying is that it's good for the planet. So how do we combat that kind of mentality? You know, global warming is great. You know, the state of Florida is going to disappear, and, you know, winter won't exist anymore. So, I mean, how do we combat that kind of thinking that global warming is good or that it's not happening?
Well, I think we've already beaten back it's not happening for the most part. And as I said, you get it on radio shows. You don't get it in the scientific literature. I don't know. John McCain isn't saying global warming is good. I grant you that there's some people who will make arguments about how there might be benefits. I've heard, and you know, there's some truth to it. Some parts of the world will have better weather, like, you know, Alberta or Buffalo, New York. It'll probably be much more temperate. It might be more pleasant to live there. But on balance, the world is going to suffer. I think everyone has to agree with that. So we just have to continue refuting the arguments.
I think, just to pick up on one point you made, that it is true that I think for a long time you could determine whether an individual was a Republican or a Democrat by asking them one question about global warming. Do you think that, in fact, though, that you really think that that started to break down?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think you could see it in the Republican presidential field. I think that Bush was sort of, you can see in Bush himself, he finally started to admit the science himself. Something changed in the last couple of years. It's complicated what it was, but we finally passed a big hurdle, and the issue became less partisan, the science became less debated, although there's still some of that, and some people I think are probably going to take it to the grave. They're sort of thinking that it's not human-caused, but luckily we're past it.
All right, another Urbana caller, I think, is next, line number one. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to share something that I came across, and it's probably the most cogent argument that I've found yet framing the debate on global warming. I caught this a little while ago. It was a YouTube video. It was a hilarious title called The Most Terrifying Video You'll Ever See. It was a science teacher that was framing the debate as a Pascal's wager. And what he was doing was saying that, okay, let's just go ahead and change the dynamic of the argument. Say there's a possibility it's real, or there's a possibility it's not real. And then you put this on a different line, and you say we can do something about it, and we don't do something about it. And the way that he framed this was saying, like, let's say when we were thinking that the Germans might be having an H-bomb or something, well, just the mere threat of that mobilized the military, economic, scientific community into addressing the risk and saying that the worst-case scenario was too awful to deal with, so we're going to do something. And the way that he compared this to global warming was saying, okay, let's take the people that say it's not happening and we don't do anything. This is our best-case scenario. And they say, well, let's look at the other three possibilities where we do something and it's not happening and we have economic turmoil and problems and it never happens, so we're fools. And then you look at the shift from that and you say that it is happening and we don't do anything, and you can draw any number of horrible scenarios extrapolated from this problem. And then you can also say that it is happening and we do something. Well, we have the economic problems and the hurdles and we overcome them, but you know, maybe living at a lower standard of living, but the human race lived. I do recommend, this is about a 10-minute video, and it framed the debate for me in a very quick way that speaks to both an emotional and intellectual response and also a social responsibility type of response. And if you feel like you want to comment about the idea of addressing global warming as a risk assessment, and I'll go ahead and hang up and listen.
All right.
Well, I've seen the video talking about it really got around a lot, and I mean, I completely agree with the logic of it. Global warming is a risk issue, and it has to be thought of as that. What's great about this sort of decision tree kind of analysis in the video is that it also, once again, gets you over this idea that you need absolute 100% scientific certainty. All you need to know is that a lot of scientists, actually it turns out to be the vast bulk, think it's human-caused, and that leads you, do you deal with it or do you not deal with it? If you don't deal with it, it could be really bad. If you deal with it, the worst thing you have is, like, cleaner air, cleaner technologies for getting energy. Whoops, what a terrible thing.
Yeah, so it comes down to the issue of, what's the greater cost? What's going to cost you more, doing something or not doing something? Mm-hmm. And it sounds as if even if it turns out that the global warming skeptics are right, it costs us less to do something than if it turns out that they're wrong and we still do something. Have I got that right? Anyway, yes.
Then if they're wrong and we don't.
Right, yes,
yeah,
yes,
you get the
yes,
basic idea. Yeah, it's a good argument. Right. Very good argument. McCain, I've seen, use this argument.
Let's try and get at least one more caller, and that would be someone in Gibson City, line number two. Hello.
Yes, hello. Yes, well, I guess my question is, I'm not a scientist. I'm just an ordinary citizen concerned about our environment. And I've had an opportunity to work with up in Canada with the Aboriginal people and the uranium mining. And the one thing I discovered, and I just want your opinion, is that the First Nations people, we could learn from them because they care about the environment and what they call Mother Earth. And they care about it for not just their people, but everybody. And I wonder if we as a culture, and in the U.S., if money is been played an important part of, money's more important than the environmental issue. And I'm just going to hang up and listen to see what you have to say to that. And thank you for what you're doing.
Thanks. I think, unfortunately, it is the case on too many environmental issues. Corporations have denied the science or tried to block action just so they can maintain a status quo that can only be explained by their desire to please shareholders. And so, yeah, money has been winning. Money, it does not always win, and it's not going to always win on global warming, or maybe it will win in the sense that corporations finally say, let's deal with global warming because then we'll make money finding new non-carbon intensive technologies, but at least that'd be a better way for money to win.
Yeah. We're just about the point we have to finish here. Just earlier, just because we were talking about this question of what was being forecast for the coming hurricane season, and that's really where we started talking about hurricanes. I found here, and I believe this is the forecast for 2008, the gray forecast, came out in early December, and what they're calling for at this point is 13 named storms, seven hurricanes, and three intense hurricanes. So that would make it not real bad. Although again, that's awfully early to be making your
projections. They'll change as the season gets closer. They get more accurate. That's the way that it goes. And that sounds quieter than I had actually thought. You remember that the dramatic 2005 year had 28 storms, so 13 is less than half of that.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to watch how this develops. And in the meantime, if people want to read more on this issue, you can look for this book that we have been talking about. The title of the book is Storm World, Hurricanes, Politics, and the Battle Over Global Warming. It's published by Harcourt by our guest, Chris Mooney. He is the Washington correspondent for Seed magazine. You also might want to look at his other book, The Republican War on Science. He lives in Washington, D.C. And Chris Mooney, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.